Thank you, Andy and Hazel and musicians and everyone, actually, as we've worshipped together this morning. I think we've really prepared ourselves to identify with Habakkuk's heart today. Now, we started having a look at Habakkuk last week. I'd encourage you, if you haven't got a Bible, to put your hand up, and Quentin has got some. He'll bring them to you. You'll find Habakkuk on page 940 in the church Bibles, or if you're in your own Bible, it's the fifth to last book in the Old Testament. And Habakkuk is a short prophecy. Habakkuk was a prophet, and we've got three chapters recorded of his conversation with God, and we've already heard about the first part of that last week. But perhaps just to recap quickly, this was his first complaint to God. He said, "Why do you make me look at injustice?" There'd been a lot going on in Israel with some kings who'd done evil in the eyes of the Lord. Well, I should say in Judah, actually. This was the southern kingdom, the two tribes who were around Jerusalem at the time. And Habakkuk said, "Why do I have to look at this?" And God replies to him. God reveals something to him, and he says, "I am raising up the Babylonians." God says he's going to do something unbelievable about it, because from this relatively unheard-of city of Babylon would come ferocious and ruthless armies who would take over Judah. And they will sort out that injustice that you're seeing all around you today, Habakkuk. That's what the Lord replied. Can you imagine what the next word is? "But," says Habakkuk, but that sounds even worse, these awful armies, than the thing that's going on around us at the moment, which was what I was complaining about in the first place. Habakkuk didn't really like God's answer. And let's hear what he has to say. We're just going to read from chapter 1, verse 12, to the start, into the start of chapter 2. Habakkuk begins, "Lord, are you not from everlasting? My God, my Holy One, you will never die. You, Lord, have appointed them to execute judgment. You, my rock, have ordained them to punish. Your eyes are too pure to look on evil. You cannot tolerate wrongdoing. Why then do you tolerate the treacherous? Why are you silent while the wicked swallow up those more righteous than themselves? You've made people like the fish in the sea, like the sea creatures that have no ruler. The wicked foe pulls all of them up with hooks. He catches them in his net. He gathers them up in his dragnet, and so he rejoices and is glad. Therefore, he sacrifices to his net. He burns incense to his dragnet, for by his net he lives in luxury and enjoys the choicest food. Is he to keep on emptying his net, destroying nations without mercy? I will stand at my watch and station myself on the ramparts. I will look to see what he will say to me, and what answer I am to give to this complaint." So Habakkuk has a second complaint here. But what is interesting is that he doesn't dive straight in there. He starts by doing actually what we've done this morning, by remembering who God is. So we come to Habakkuk remembering. And the words he uses are, "Lord, are you not from everlasting? My God, my Holy One, you will never die." He talks about this everlasting characteristic of God, something that is really outstanding. He will live forever. He will never die. He talks about how God is holy. He is pure goodness. He is pure love. He is pure justice. He puts him in this league of his own, this league of being holy, as we call it. And he reminds himself that God is in charge. God is almighty. He will do what he's appointed. He will do what he has ordained. Warren Wiersbe had some wise words, I think, about when we find ourselves in a place with a difficult question. He said, never doubt in the dark, in that place, what God has told you in the light. And that's what Habakkuk starts with. He remembers who God is. And he doesn't just remember who God is, but he remembers who God is in relation to him. Do you pick out these words, my, in these phrases? He makes them personal. My God, my Holy One, my rock. And I think we can learn from Habakkuk here. If we want to get off to a good start in our conversations with God, let's remember who he is. Let's draw on some of those names that he's revealed to us in the Bible. And let's make them personal. My Father, my Savior, my Rock, my Shepherd, my Vine, my Resurrection and my Life, my Lord. There's no formula here of magic words, but it's about reminding ourselves of the importance of who God is and our relationship with him, a personal one. So having done that, Habakkuk then does move on to his question. He questions God. How can you use wrong to address the wrong that I'm already seeing around me? Isn't the medicine worse than the cure, he says? How can devastation that you bring through these Babylonians possibly fulfill your purpose of righteousness? And in the process, aren't those who trust in you going to be hurt as well? He says they'll swallow up those more righteous than themselves. And there is a place, isn't there, to question God. Andy spoke of this last week, that we can ask honest and heartfelt questions of God when we're faced by these apparent contradictions. It's better to come to God in honesty and ask questions rather than just assume what the answer is. We can grapple with God over these things. And how shocking this was. I think Habakkuk must have known something about these Babylonians and the kind of things they might be entertaining when he spoke about this, him treating people as fish, this dehumanization of the people that they would bring. It sounds awful, but historians tell us that the Babylonians actually used hooks through the lower jaw of people to lead them away into captivity. And this might sound shocking, but we hear of shocking things like that, don't we? Within the Middle East, within Nigeria, even in recent weeks, we've heard of some real atrocities. And it's that wickedness which makes us almost just want to switch off the radio. I can't believe this is going on. That is where Habakkuk is when the God says that he's actually going to use the Babylonians here. But having posed his question, he then pauses again before God. And the word used here is, I will watch. Now, he says he will climb up the ramparts to watch. We don't know whether that's literal or not. I know that many of us will have places where we enjoy meeting with God. For me, it's very often on a hilltop, or even better still, on a mountaintop. Not that there's many of those in Warwickshire. For Habakkuk, maybe it was literally at the top of those ramparts. Or maybe this is figurative, but he was going to put himself in a place, in a mindset where he's on the lookout for God's answer. He says, I will stand at my watch and station myself on the ramparts and see what you will say to me. He's attentive to God. And again, he's in a place where he's standing in awe of God. I think this is something of what we've been singing and praying about this morning, about, Lord, show me what you're doing. Open the eyes of my heart to see what you are doing. Just as we don't have eyes in our hearts. So it's a bit odd, isn't it, that he will look to see what you're going to say. You can't normally look to hear words. But again, it's this sense of attentiveness and openness that is being expressed by Habakkuk. And if our prayer and our questioning doesn't have that, then it's missing something. It's like a child who rings the doorbell and then runs away. They're not actually interested in the answer. They're just wanting to play games, really. It's like playing games with God. Instead, it's about us waiting and actually seeing how God does answer our questions. Well, the great news is God does answer. We'll read the rest now, starting at chapter 2, verse 2. Then the Lord replied, "Write down the revelation and make it plain on tablets, so that a herald may run with it. For the revelation awaits an appointed time. It speaks of the end, and it will not prove false. Though it linger, wait for it. It will certainly come and will not delay. See, the enemy is puffed up. His desires are not upright. But the righteous person will live by his faithfulness. Indeed, wine betrays him. He is arrogant and never at rest, because he's as greedy as the grave, and like death, is never satisfied. He gathers to himself all the nations and takes captive all the peoples. Will not all of them taunt him and ridicule and scorn with ridicule and scorn, saying, 'Woe to him who piles up stolen goods and makes himself wealthy by extortion. How long must this go on? Will not your creditors suddenly arise? Will they not wake up and make you tremble? Then you will become their prey, because you have plundered many nations. The people who are left will plunder you. For you have shed human blood. You have destroyed lands and cities and everyone in them. Woe to him who builds his house by unjust gain, setting his nest on high to escape the clutches of ruin. You have plotted the ruin of many peoples, shaming your own house and forfeiting your life. The stones of the wall will cry out, and the beams of the woodwork will echo it. Woe to him who builds a city with bloodshed and establishes a town by injustice. Has not the Lord Almighty determined that the people's labor is only fuel for the fire, and that the nations exhaust themselves for nothing? For the earth will be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord, as the waters cover the sea. Woe to him who gives drink to his neighbors, pouring it in from the wineskin till they are drunk, so that he can gaze on their naked bodies. You'll be filled with shame instead of glory. Now it's your turn. Drink and let your nakedness be exposed. The cup from the Lord's right hand is coming round to you, and disgrace will cover your glory. The violence that you've done to Lebanon will overwhelm you, and your destruction of animals will terrify you. For you have shed human blood. You have destroyed lands and cities and everyone in them. Of what value to an idol is an idol carved by a craftsman, or an image that teaches lies? For the one who makes it trusts in his own creation. He makes idols that cannot speak. Woe to him who says to wood, 'Come to life,' or to lifeless stone, 'Wake up.' Can it give guidance? It is covered with gold and silver. There is no breath in it. The Lord is in his holy temple. Let all the earth be silent before him." So God does answer. And in fact, here is the lesson, if we're in any doubt of that. God is not secretive in the way in which he works. God actually likes to reveal things to his people, to those who ask. The prophet Amos said, "Surely the sovereign Lord does nothing without revealing his plan to his servants and his prophets." He does this through his prophets. And I know there are people in this church who spend time waiting on the Lord or watching and listening to what he will say and reveal to them. We can learn through others. We can learn by listening to God and letting him speak with his spirit into our hearts. We learn through the Bible.
We learn by watching his will be done, by seeing what he has ordained and where he actually stops things. God will answer us as he answered Habakkuk. And God then goes on to say, for the revelation awaits an appointed time. It speaks of the end and will not prove false. Though it linger, wait for it. It will certainly come and will not delay. You see, God is saying, wait for my perfect timing. It might feel like it's lingering, but it will happen, not a minute early or a minute late. Waiting, that's what God is calling Habakkuk to do. And it can be quite a hard thing, can't it? Quite a lonely thing. I was thinking about waiting. One of the things I love doing is going to Scotland. And one way which you used to be able to get around in Scotland is the post bus. Who's heard of the post bus? Right, just one or two people. I don't know whether they're still around today, but that is a post bus. Basically, they had the postman would give you a lift, so they had minibuses. And they only came once a day. So you'd wait by the side of the road, and someone would have said, oh, you can get the post bus here. And you'd be like standing there thinking, well, it was meant to be about 10. And what time is it now? And, well, maybe I've got the wrong spot. Maybe it's broken down. Maybe I've got the wrong day. Maybe they were just having me on. And you're thinking, is this post bus real? Is it ever going to come? And that is waiting in doubt, isn't it? And I've had that experience. And what Habakkuk is called to do here is to wait in faith. It's the opposite. It's waiting, knowing that that bus is going to come. It's knowing that God is going to do what he will do. I will work out my plans in my perfect time, he says. And this is echoed throughout Scripture. It's there in Isaiah, another of my favorite verses. I am the Lord, and in its time I will do this swiftly. There's no delay about it when God chooses to move. And in fact, here we see this prophecy was actually fulfilled. First of all, Babylon, in around about 597 BC, invaded Judah and did put an end to these wicked kings. Later on, we then hear that the next phase of it actually pans out, and Persia, about 60 years later, invades Babylon and annihilates that kingdom. And of course, we're also waiting, aren't we, for Jesus. That's another waiting. And sometimes it can feel, hey, more than 2,000 years have gone by and we're still waiting for Jesus to come back. But Peter addresses this when he says, do not forget this one thing, dear friends. With the Lord, a day is like 1,000 years, and 1,000 years are like a day. The Lord is not slow in keeping his promise, as some understand slowness. Instead, he's patient with you, not wanting anyone to perish, but everyone to come to repentance. But the day of the Lord will come like a thief. The heavens will disappear with a roar. The elements will be destroyed by fire, and the earth and everything done in it will be laid bare, says Peter. Do we wait expectantly, knowing that Jesus is coming back, knowing that he will come and surprise us like a thief, knowing that it could happen any time, that God will fulfill all that he has promised? Or do we wait in doubt? Then God continues to answer Habakkuk's specific complaint. He says, don't think that I don't see everything that goes on. You see, Habakkuk has actually said something that I don't think I agree with. He says, your eyes are too pure to look on evil. I don't think that is actually the case. I think God does see everything that goes on in this world. And it's there in Lamentations, where it says, to deny people their rights before the Most High, to deprive them of justice, would not the Lord see such things? He does see everything. And he says that here. He says, see, the enemy is puffed up. His desires are not upright. He sees the hearts. He sees everything that is going on, and far more than us, in fact. And yet here, beside that, he says, but the righteous will live by faith, or the righteous person will live by their faithfulness. The faithfulness translation conveys this sense of an ongoing trust in God, that people will be saved who continue trusting in God. And it might sound like a familiar verse, and indeed it is, because it's quoted three times in the New Testament. Paul quotes it in Romans 1, where he begins to explain what Jesus has done in saving us, when he says, the righteous will live by faith in Christ, he explains, an ongoing trust in Jesus. Yes, if you put your trust in me, you will live at the end of all this, is what God is saying in that verse. And then he goes on to another part of the answer. He does go on to another part of the answer. That was really that answer to the question of what's happening to the righteous. Aren't they all going to be come to the same end as well? But he then goes on to say, yes, there will be another phase to this. The Babylonians are going to be ferocious, and they're going to do wicked things, but they won't get away with it either. And this next part of the answer, he goes on in these harsh words, doesn't he? Five woes God speaks. Woe is not a word to be used lightly. It's a word that is used as a curse of God. You may remember Jesus used this word. He spoke woe over three towns on the shores of Galilee. In those days, there were four main towns, where about 250,000 people lived. And he said, woe to you, Bethsaida. Woe to you, Capernaum. Woe to you, Chorazin. But of the other one, Tiberias, Jesus actually said nothing. And today, if you go to Galilee, I'm told you'll have to stay in Tiberias, because it's the only town that is still there. The others that Jesus said woe to have disappeared. And when God says woe, then he will deal with what he sees and hates. And he does here. He is saying, I do hate evil. Don't think for a minute, Habakkuk, that I don't detest evil in all its guises. And I think these words speak to us just as much today in the 21st century as they did then. We're just going to look at a few of the things that that God says woe to in his response. First of all, extortion, theft motivated by greed. And he says, you in turn will become a victim of the people who you've stolen from. The plunderers will be plundered themselves. And indeed, that is what happened. Persia came in and plundered Babylon, who were the people who God was speaking against at this point. And don't we see this today as well? Those who do misappropriate funds, those who do missell financial products or charge extortionate interest rates as payday lenders, they are exposed in the press. They are brought to justice in many cases. Extortion is the first. Exploitation is the second. Trampling on others with no regard for justice in order to build up some kind of empire. The very structure of that empire, the walls and the beams of that empire, will cry out against that exploitation, God says. Some years ago, I visited the state of Mississippi and went to some of the plantation houses. And I think you can hear that there. You can't actually look at these grand houses without them saying, this was built up with exploitation of people who worked under slavery. And it's the same today, isn't it? There continues to be slavery in places, in sweatshops, in plantations for cash crops. That's why we have a fair trade movement today, because of exploitation. Bloodshed is the third. And those who shed blood will be frustrated, God said. They will be exhausted in vain. Isn't that what we teach our children? Fighting and violence will get you nowhere. And yet, what do we see around us still today? 2,500 years later, in Syria, Nigeria, Iraq, Paris, Libya, Afghanistan, Copenhagen, Ukraine, to name some of this year's headlines. Pointless bloodshed continues. Abuse, God speaks against. Woe to those who abuse, getting people drunk just to gaze on their nakedness. These people will be shamed. Now it's your turn, God says. Does that sound familiar in the catalogue of recent sexual abuse scandals, where we see celebrities covering their faces in shame as they leave the court? Woe to them, God says. And idolatry, last of all. What more is there to say than the brilliant description that we have in verse 19? Woe to him who says to wood, come to life, or to lifeless stone, wake up. Can it give guidance? There's no breath in it. And it may sound a bit old-fashioned to make idols of wood and gold and stone, but it's also about human constructs. It says about things made by human hands, by our own creation here. And of course, there are more things than ever which people make as human constructs, which they put their trust in: possessions, homes, qualifications, bank accounts, businesses and organizations. It's been said of our generation that we have big thoughts about humankind and small thoughts about God. But of what value are these human constructs? Can they take the place of a God who guides us through our life? Woe to them who put their trust in those things, says God. They will not get away with it, because all evil will eventually catch up with their perpetrators. People will reap what they sow. Sin is self-destructive. And furthermore, it says here, God will judge. It is inevitable as blessing. He will take this seriously. And this still applies today. Are there times when we don't watch the news and think something has to be done about this? These people can't get away with doing that. We're desperate for things to be dealt with. And it is vital that God's justice remains for us to keep a hope in our fallen world, that actually these things don't go unnoticed. This applies, I think, to all of us to some degree. We're all tempted sometimes to say, oh, well, everyone seems to be doing it. People are getting away with it. It's not true. Evil will catch up with all of us. And that's, of course, why we need to trust in Jesus. Because he has been punished. He's taken that punishment for us. And because of that, God will no longer hold those sins against those of us who trust in Jesus. At the same time, let us not let that grace that we found in Jesus make us regard wrongdoing lightly, though. God hasn't changed his mind by sending his son. He doesn't say, oh, actually, all that stuff's fine now. He still hates evil, and we shouldn't take it lightly. But thanks be to God for Jesus. And so we come to the final verse we're going to look at today. The Lord is in his holy temple. Let all the earth be silent before him. That's where God says, stand in awe and wait before me. My standards are still as holy as ever. I am still the holy God. I'm not made of stone or wood, as we prayed this morning. He is real and living. And a further verse that is actually thrown in the middle, but kind of goes alongside this. For the earth will be filled with the knowledge of the glory of God as the waters cover the sea. It's certain, just as the sea is full of water, so the earth will become full of the glory of God one day. One day it will be so obvious when everyone is called to account, and God will deal with evil once and for all. And now, next week, we'll go on to look at the next section of Habakkuk. But I'd just like to spend the last minute pausing and thinking about what we can learn today from the way Habakkuk has grappled with this question? And the answer, I think, is that we live by faith. Let me unpack that a little bit. You see, we do have big questions, don't we? We're not wrong to have big questions. And there's been a number of big questions in the media lately, thinking particularly of what was said by Stephen Fry. But over the years, I've met lots of people with questions about God. And most of them have actually answered their own question in their heart before they've even uttered it. You see, I think it's about where we started this morning. It's about opening the eyes of our heart. It's about living by faith. If we ask a question and we already think we know the answer, or we've chosen the answer we want, or we don't want there to be a good answer to that question, we just want to justify our position. But if we ask the big questions in faith, saying, God, I know you're there and you are doing something, but it's not making sense to me at the moment, then God will speak into that situation. And that's where Habakkuk was. He wrestled through his questions in humility and faith. And it is that verse which says we will live by faith that is so key here. He showed faith in the way he remembered who God was. He showed faith in the way he actually posed his question to God. He showed faith in the way that he watched, by which I mean to watch and to listen, to see what God is going to say. And there was faith then in waiting for God to actually do what he would reveal. At any step, we can actually choose to abort that and to ignore God. We can forget to go to God in the first place in our time of need. We can ask a question but actually not want the answer. Or we can reject the answer. Or we can give up if we don't see the answer straight away. We can not wait. And turn into self-sufficiency and say, actually, you know, God, I'm impatient waiting for you. I'm going to fix this one myself. But Habakkuk is very clear to us. We need to cling to the Lord with our big questions. It's much the same message as was there in the first question we explored last week. Jonathan Lamb says, there are moments when, despite the assurance of fellow Christians, we find it hard to make sense of what is happening in our world. At such times, we need to find our way back to the solid rock of God's promises in which we first believed. So let us rest in faith. Let us live by faith, trusting God day by day and learning to stand in awe as we do so. I'm going to pray briefly, and then we'll just spend a minute or two in silence before God. Let us just be ourselves before him in our hearts and see what he has to say. O Lord, our God, O Rock, you are from everlasting. O Holy One, my Holy One, let all the earth be silent before you.